Good morning. Hello, everyone. We'll give everybody else a few minutes to join and then we'll get started.
Hi, Chris. This is Bora speaking from Russia.
Hi, Bora. Welcome.
Thank you.
Hi, Chris. This is Wenjing.
Hi, Wenjing. Welcome. Get started in just a couple of minutes. We give everybody a few more minutes to join, but while we're waiting, I want to draw everybody's attention that I created a wiki page for the architecture planning meeting with logistics and a preliminary agenda. And as more information becomes available, I'll be posting it on this page as well as sending it through email. It's called Casablanca Architecture Planning Meeting, and it's linked from the main architecture subcommittee wiki page. And I see we have quorum now, so let me drop this. We have a busy agenda today. Wenjing is up first to talk about the Clover Project. And then we have Sumitra next for OSAM, and then Parviz with the readout from the Tiger team on microservices. So we have a busy call. Let me start off with Wenjing.
Thanks, Chris. Let me see. So I'm going to start sharing. So I'm calling from a hotel room in case things go bad. Let me know. You can dial in back on the phone as well. Let's see. All right, can you see my screen okay?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So, a little bit of a background before I start. I understand that ONAP, especially in significant towards a cloud native, and there's a project that we've been doing since last year, second half of last year, in OPV, and would like to let this group know what kind of work we're doing. So this presentation will be the Gambia release that Little will be starting this week. I think we are releasing the Fraser this week, today, in fact. So we will be officially on Gambia starting from now. I will probably do two portions, mostly initially give the information about the Clover and what we want to do, what kind of services and software we'll be delivering. And then maybe in the end of that, you know, a few suggestions and ideas that how, from on our point of view, you may be able to let. So the motivation for us in Clover is really looking at much more, I think, forward-looking and significant news that I think the telco industry and networking in general would like to do and that will pop. So these are, I think, very exciting. There's a lot of new services people have been thinking about, and you know, the big categories I listed here are huge number of IoT devices, a lot of very different user experience that new is exploring, and just new services that the traditional software may not be designed to do. Zero touch is a very good big thing. I think ONAP really is, you know, for automation. And it's going to be which level of automation. We also would like to look at application level innovation. So this is you know, a lot of to do. For example, how do you engage the user? How do you use these are the sort of high level drivers for cloud native. And we did have a ONS in a presentation go more detail on some of the challenges we'll face. And these are on the ONS. Clover then it is really to a reference framework so that we can support VNFs as cloud native microservices. And we define VNF as very general. This may be a bad naming convention, but essentially any software that a networking system will need. And in that case, will include management control and data paths as well. And cloud native, we would look at the really three categories, and the containerized services. And we have other projects working on containers and Kubernetes already. So Clover's focus really is how to support.
Getting noise from someone.
Enter your participant ID followed by pound. Otherwise, just press pound to continue.
Let's see. Okay, go ahead.
All right. Yeah. So our focus then is really in how do we enable better support, let's say, microservices, and in that we will be introducing a service mesh. We'll get into the detail later, but the first choice of that will be Istio. We will include a set of common tools, visibility for traffic control policies and for security, and then a set of very common utilities and components for microservices. The second main item is a continuous deployment. And so we were talking about, you know, mostly not just the traditional way of looking at from developer point of how to CI/CD, but also from operational point, how do you do upgrade and more common deployment that the software change will require. Trying to get a basic layer of why we think these are a problem, what the people want to achieve. The first level of, I think...
excuse me, I'm going to put everybody on mute and then unmute Wenjing. We're getting some background noise coming in here.
Are we okay. back?
Wenjing, yeah, go ahead. Let's see if that's any better.
All right, thanks. So the first level issues people face as, you know, we adopt microservices is the so-called container sprawl. As more and more microservices get into deployment, scaling is really the issue. And, you know, just to keep track of what is doing what and how they relate to each other is very difficult. And there's a lot of ad hoc ways of solving this problem, of course, over the years. People have developed various kind of tools to do this. The new, I think, solution will be a fully dedicated layer, and this is what we call service mesh. And the second level would be, what kind of tools you deploy on that. I think some of the issues people face will be compatibility between independently developed software, support for legacy software, and then how do you enable different teams from potentially different groups or different companies developing different components, each independent microservices to work together. And in every cases, we have additional requirement, I think a lot in networking as well as storage. So the networking side, naturally, we want to network level tracing, and also in lower layer, how do you do middle boxes, for example, and have that information also available for policy control. The third issue we want to address, again, is continuous delivery or deployment. And so this is really a very important issue. Most of people, at least in OPNV, for example, currently do CI and probably to one level of deployment. And typically, you repeat that process when things change. Really allow us to be able to have two layers, so you maintain a relatively stable and long-running infrastructure layer, and then applications can come and go and live without the whole service being teared down. The fourth area, I think, is probably what most relevant to NLV, and this is again going to networking in storage. We've also starting to work on the edge-related problems and enhancements required for other common services for NLV. I specifically call out here that potentially we would interface with ONAP and how do we support ONAP requirements better. And finally, best practices for the community as well as influence or contribute upstream. So here's the initial framework, and this is what we just released and also demoed earlier in ONS. So I'm going to skip most of this for now. There's a lot of technical sort of component choices and design choices. So that will come a bit later as well. So a quick view of what the Istio-based control plane look like and different data plane components. This is, again, the first choice is Envoy. So imagine the network service would be on the left side of the blue arrow coming to a a Sidecar or proxy-based deployment scenario. And the control plane allows us to do policy control, traffic load distributions, as well as security and discovery and monitoring of statistics and operational information. So the additional networking services, I think the most important one probably initially would be an ingress controller. And so the ingress controller is really the first component you're going to need to deploy anything live to interact with the external world. So that will be your gateway, sort of like from the rest of the world to this service mesh. The other, I think, a very important component for VNF, for the data pass VNF, for example, and you know, a middle box would be the lower layer or the networking layer data pass, and how do you get that the control information available? So that's the major deliverable for us in the next release. Once we do that, there are actually very wide target environment open to us. So our goal is to make sure that we can cover the full spectrum. We start with you know, developer devices and edge or IoT devices. From the far left side to smart systems for edge and the typical hardware spec like OPMV uses in the Pharos labs, and then to public clouds. So we will be starting with the Google cloud platform, and then AWS, and but would probably be working with CNCF projects to make sure that anything that Kubernetes runs, we can run as well. Okay, so cloud native, again, this is just rerun the one of the issues that we want to resolve is a continuous deployment for applications. So the green would be the existing CI pipeline, and that produce a repo, container repo. And from there, we drive the rest of the deployment scenario and the, yes?
One question, Vinji. I'm just trying to understand Clover project itself. So, I mean, assume that, you know, there is one project which is containerized and microservice based. So is that Clover project makes it, integrates, any containerized project with these technologies which you mentioned, like service mesh and, other things? Is that the idea? That, I mean, is it going to Cloverize microservice application? Okay.
Right, so if you have a microservice application done already, then you already have, for example here, right, you already have the pipeline all the way to the purple storage repo there. So that, that's no change to that. But this CI/CD tool will allow you to do the rest of it. So that's one very good example. On the service mesh side, in theory, these microservices and service mesh can be deployed almost transparently. So let's say in the high level, right, if you are a typical layer 7 application running as a service layer, this would happen very easily. Now, if it's other protocols are required to make this work, then we will have to find out where the gaps are and how we'll support it. But in the easiest case, you would actually, by the way, see the data coming out to you, You would be able to actually see a graph of all the dependencies and be able to track a lot better. So it will help you then think about how do you scale, how do you do error recovery. The benefit would come to you through the service mesh itself, as well as the tools integrated with it.
So, I mean, today, if you look at service mesh, there is something called sidecar injector, right? That automatically basically brings up the sidecar for every microservice. But what Clover is doing is that much more than that. Like it is a kind of integrates in the CI/CD pipeline to ensure that all packages are basically included and then tested together.
Right. So for instance, in this picture, this example would say you have five components, A, B, C, D, and E, combined together as a complete service. And these arrows are meant to be, say, how they communicate with each other. In the best case, the sidecars, the envoy proxy here are injected transparently. So without much of any change at all, the service should continue to work. So this will allow a whole bunch of the data be available, and also you'll be able to start to control, do load balancing experiments, do test experiments, stress, and creating errors, for example. All those could happen. In addition to that, the CI/CD will be able to use those information and this example shown here, a candidate deployment, right? You have a new version, test out the new version, and decide whether the new versions are any good. And you can repeat that process and eventually deploy it, all that designed and automated using live data traffic. So you can test it, collect the experience, and using some kind of a decision criteria and allow that whole process to be automated. So that's the idea. That's what this tool in Clover would be able to support.
Okay, thank you.
Great question. Anything else before I continue?
Hi, this is Roger. So Clover looks great. It has a lot of capabilities here, but there's really kind of two things that we need to worry about. One is the ONAP platform itself and its components and its microservices, and then the VNFs as components that are potentially purchased by the operator from third parties. So are you proposing it for both, or is this only an ONAP platform capability?
It's applicable for both. I would definitely say, what I made a statement earlier is that as far as the infrastructure is concerned, it looks the same. So it's definitely good for both. The ONAP piece may run separately. I think that's an operational decision in terms of a physical infrastructure. But in theory, you can deploy both at the same platform. And when we do tests, we do that as well. Yeah.
So this is a fairly radical change, right, for ONAP, because you're talking about different kind of orchestration, a different flow, a different business flow, different artifacts for delivery. It pretty much changes everything there is to change in ONAP.
Also, can we say let's focus on one part? I think that's a very good question that I had similar thought. Are we doing for the VNFs or are we doing for ONAP? And say our initial focus is ONAP, to say how do we make ONAP modules cloud native and more resilient and continuous deployment. If we focus only on that, that might be more trackable than to say let's do both VNF as well as ONAP.
Yeah, I agree. I think we'll get a lot of support for a good CI/CD pipeline for ONAP itself.
Exactly.
Getting it to go all the way to the VNFs, that's a much bigger problem.
But if you look at the description of the project in OPNFE, isn't the Clover project targeting CIC, like deployment of VNFs? I think that's the prime use case, isn't it?
Yeah. So again, we if you look at the infrastructure, right, and what software is running on top of it, I think the ONAP components. Let's pick any of the ONAP components. That's definitely the easy and probably the first step we can do. We do Clover project itself do target VNF as well, and so that's why we need to go to a data pass, looking at the middle boxes, etc. But those are less. If you look at this picture, right? Those necessarily easily.
We have less control because we depend on the vendor on how they design VNF. We can encourage them to say your VNF should be cloud native, should be using stores and other things to do that.
Right.
But I think that would be a longer term. I think in short term, if you can focus only on ONAP and gain some experience, and then we can tell vendor to say this is how you should design your VNF also that can be continuously deployed. And as Roger said, that will have a very dramatic impact on ONAP as well.
But when it comes to, you know, ONAP components themselves, you know, since they are generic IT components, there are open source frameworks around CI/CD already existing. Like you have Spinnaker, which is used as a CI/CD pipeline and deployment. And then you already have OOM, you know, which is doing deployment of ONAP components using Helm and Kubernetes. So I think we really need to see, you know, what would Clover bring on top of OOM. And then if you basically use Spinnaker as a CI/CD pipeline, what additional would Clover bring in? You know, what I read from the Clover project description is, you know, when it comes to CI/CD of VNFs, yes, you know, there are certain things which where it is different compared to traditional open components like the ONAP components themselves. So maybe there is some value, but otherwise, if you really want to deploy just ONAP, you know, we should check what additional things we would get from Clover as opposed to what is available already in the open source community.
Yeah, guys. Can I talk?
Yes, Pravis.
Yeah, okay. I'm hearing some echo.
We can't hear you, Pravis.
Can you speak up a little bit? You're sounding a little quiet. Pravis, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
You have to speak up a little bit, Pravis.
Okay. Can you unmute me? Is that?
You're unmuted. You just have to speak loudly.
Don't be bashful. Why Pravis is trying to fix his audio problem. I have a comment though, and it's along the line of what Roger and others highlighted, including Vima. Wenjing, I think we need to, in your presentation, we need to be clear in terms of whether this proposal is targeted towards a VNF deployment and support, or whether it is targeted towards the ONAP components. If it is a VNF,
so let me probably jump to the. I thought about those problems, and I totally agree. I think
okay.
Your analysis is right on spot. So here's my. I was thinking about the, you know, what we can do actually next,
okay.
And one of the topics that maybe we look at the one or two components in ONAP itself, and then use that to, you know, try on the CI/CD pipeline, try on running a long, you know, against on the shared long running testbed, and maybe explore a common use case, and that use case can be the sort of like an example VNF. If that's too far, I think we probably should have just focused on ONAP component because it's, in terms of the feedback or experience you're gonna get, they look the same. So I think ONAP is probably a ONAP component is a good way to start. So I'm in agreement on that too.
Yeah, I think this would also help us with some of our integration testing if we can plug into this kind of pipeline so that we can be testing more real time earlier in the release and have better results as we come into the result, the release closure where we are now.
Yeah, exactly. I would strongly support that. We're trying to get to, I think we should try to get towards an agile deployment method where we are continuously doing integration tests and we need a strong CI/CD pipeline. So I know Michael O'Brien already has a pipeline for this and that can be enhanced or we can use other ones. I know GoCD is used. There's many different options. But I think as a team, if we do nothing else but to have a good CI/CD pipeline in Casablanca, we'll make a huge improvement in the project.
Chris, I'm
creating
echo, yeah?
We hear you fine, Parviz. You're just quiet. Okay, I think we're losing Parviz.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, we hear you. You're just coming in quietly, so speak loudly.
Okay, all right. Back to Roger's point. So we have the CI/CD process, and then we have the deployment using OM. Now, is that complementary or is there overlap?
Well, there's a lot of complementary technology here. This is based on Kubernetes, and what we're doing with OOM is using Kubernetes and Helm to do the deployments. So we can do a deployment, an upgrade, a rollback. All of that stuff is aligned here. So I think there's a strong alignment. There may be some specific technology in Clover that may or may not we want to use. I don't know. But the overall idea, I think there's great alignment. At least for the components that are in ONAP. For VNFs, I think that's it's very problematic.
So that's a question I had. You know, if I just create a Spinnaker pipeline and trigger the Helm-based deployment APIs which OM provides, what additional do I have in Clover? To kind of support CI/CD. Is it as simple as creating a Spinnaker pipeline or is it more than that?
Yeah, it will be the user experience will be using either creating one or you more likely just adopting one. So someone may already have created. That's good enough for you and you can just use that will be it. Yeah.
Okay, so it's not kind of creating user interfaces on top of Spinnaker to kind of trigger deployment of ONAP and things like that. It's basically creating pipelines for ONAP applications, no ONAP components.
Right. So we have some pipelines already created, and if one of those are good for you, and you can just use that, and it should be straightforward. And we will be maintaining a long running testbed, so we can make sure the versions are right, etc. And then this test bed will be available to you. I think that's the best case. Okay. It will be really easy.
And did you say you're using Spinnaker as the pipeline technology or is it something else?
Right. Spinnaker is the pipeline technology for that. Yes.
Thank you.
And most of the sort of questions people would have would be in case you want to full automation as in zero, then you will need to, for example, decide what data to use, what data to collect, etc. And we're hoping that the rest of the Clover components will collect those data and make it available and build it into the pipeline. So that's a more evolving use case. But if you just want to, for example, helping the developers to test quicker, that's relatively simple to adopt and shouldn't have too much of a barrier.
So another question, sorry. Spinnaker has two capabilities. One is deployment management and the other is cluster management. So I believe you would use deployment management where you're using Spinnaker pipeline and then handing over to Helm as an OOM to do the actual deployment of ONAP modules, right? You would not use the cluster management feature in Spinnaker because that overlaps with what is there in OOM.
Yeah, so you could basically just do plugs, right? But a cluster is really simply an interface to a real cluster management system. So that's what I don't know how ONAP currently work with Kubernetes. Whatever that way is, you can still use the same. And the Spinnaker only need to know about it. That's
okay,
all.
Good. No, thank you.
Can I ask a question about Roger's question about VNF, applicability of this to VNFs? I was envisioning this Clover tool being used for a service provider who has an ONAP testing the VNF in their environment to make sure they trust it. And I wasn't seeing this as, you know, a VNF vendor themselves, you know, testing it during the development process. Is that the context we're referring to a VNF using this, or is it, which context should I be thinking about the pushback on?
It can be so this is DevOps, so this is always a you know, sort of almost intentional ambiguity between the two, but fundamentally this because it runs into operations, so I assume whoever is operating is the final, you know, call how to deploy. But this allows you to sort of link from the very beginning of a code change and step by step all the way to the very end. You can think of, even if it's 100%, right, pure 100% automation, but that automation process was created by, you know, the operator. The operator on the deployment scenario creating those processes, and they completely agree with and think those are good processes. And there's a way to build a human component to it as well. So you can, some of the process, one step, you know, a human intervention in the between, look at the logs, look at the data, at screenshots, and all that. So that could be part of the process too. So this use it both ways.
Another question, you know, in OPNFE, there is another project called Dovetail, which, you know, is already working on verification of VNF, you know, passing, fail, and, you know, some of the validation use cases. Is this kind of, have you discussed with them in terms of, you know, how can you integrate the validation when you're onboarding VNFs, or that's something which would be done in future?
Yeah, I think, I know there's in ONAP there's a SDK project, and for Dovetail as well. So Dovetail are more focused on the infrastructure layer, their test cases. So we will be one of the in the, you know, node in the pipeline when you do deploy a VNF. These tests can be automatically called upon, so that could be used by the pipeline itself.
Okay.
So this is the infrastructure. So Dovetail would be a results collector, and then you know, in our case, we're using VNF SDK for the validation. We do tie in with Dovetail. It's experimental in Beijing, and it'll be more robust in Casablanca. So it's something we could take advantage of if we wanted to work out that process down the road. I think this is really the plumbing to facilitate that kind of workflow at some point in the future.
Mm. Right. So one of the we can do is that you would spun off a job to run that test and then collect the results back and use that as a gating point in the pipeline. So it's a very straightforward process to design. And once those software are ready to run, they should be able to, we should be able to integrate that into the pipeline. That's pretty straightforward.
Thank you, if you're waiting for me.
Great. Where do we want to go next, Wenjing? It sounds like there's a lot of interest in the committee to take this forward for the ONAP components. How should we start working with you in the Casablanca timeframe?
Yeah, so I guess based on what I heard, probably the best way would be if this committee or other can propose some components to work with us, and we would so basically looking at my bullet item here, number 2 and number 3, maybe a little bit of a number 2, 3, and 4, right? So those are what we can do. If we have the candidates to which group to work with, we will understand their requirements better and make sure that in our release plan, we have all the dependencies covered. And so that will be probably the practical things we can do. And I'll be happy to come back and for more discussions, anything you guys would like to explore, different ideas, be happy to do that too.
Hey, this is Roger from the OOM team. Maybe a good place to start would be we can get our teams together and talk through this because it'll have a lot of impact to how we work with OOM and how we deploy the components. In addition, we have Michael O'Brien on our team, which has done the CI/CD system that already, or the CD system that already exists. So I think there may be, it'd be fruitful for us to talk together and see what we can do next. Given that we are doing a CD system today with all of the components, I don't think we have to restrict it to one or two. We can do it with everything.
Excellent. I think that will be great. Yeah, that will be great next step.
Great.
Should we go ahead and I guess I don't know where you are in your planning.
So I'll send both of you email to connect you, and then I think you could have that discussion offline, and if you do need more input from the rest of the community, you're welcome back here anytime.
Thanks.
Sure. Okay. Thank you, Wenjing. So anything else for Wenjing before we switch topics? Okay,
I'll probably sign off now. I have a right away in this meeting.
Chris, can you hear me?
Yes, Parviz.
Do you hear echo?
Thanks.
No. Yeah, thanks, Parviz. Thanks, Wenjing.
You have one question for this Clover project? Okay. Last week we talked about the service mesh. Is this going to really take care of the service mesh, or that's a separate scope? I'm hearing a lot of echo.
I think it's on your end. This is a little bit independent from that. Wenjing, are you still on?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Yeah, did you hear Parviz's question?
I think he was asking whether this is about service mesh or independent. Is that the question?
Yeah, how it ties in with Ramke's presentation with the service mesh. I think Ramke may have shared the slides with you.
Yes, so I shared mine with him as well. So my understanding is that because Clover covers both CI/CD as well as service mesh, and with service mesh you would have a lot more fine grained control over it, but it's of course an optional component to it. So we talked about some of the use cases why you would want a service mesh, and I don't know what specifically Ranky and others propose, but if we ONAP as a software architecture want to adopt a service mesh, I think there will be a huge amount of a benefit for it. Whether the community is ready for it or not, I think that's a discussion we need to have, or how we may want to introduce some of these tools. I think those are the all very valuable questions. We don't think it will be an easy adoption like in one swoop, but I do say that it is a very important step eventually, probably a lot of the software can take to make it scale, to allow the actual operation and the development much easier. So those are the benefits. I think it's still open question and how to start to go down that road.
Bajik, I have a question here. In last week, we talked about service mesh. We are going to take an incremental approach for ONAP. Maybe we take a selected number of projects and we define the roadmap over maybe the next few releases. Incrementally, we move those projects from monolith to microservices-based implementation. Now, Clover can really come in and do the service mesh for ONAP.
I think we are decoupled, isn't it? So when it comes to service mesh, each project would need to decide how they want to do their microservice architecture and use service mesh internally. Clover can, orchestrate, regardless of whether it is service mesh based or not, Clover can orchestrate the CI/CD pipeline on top.
CI/CD is something we can do today without any changes, right? So let's get started on that as fast as we can. Yeah. Other things, service mesh or whatever, that's kind of future stuff.
Well, Roger, we already agreed to take an incremental step towards that, yeah?
Yeah, but I think what I think Roger is saying is we can do them decoupled with each other. They don't have dependencies,
Right. So
adoption can happen in
parallel. Yeah, maybe, Pavez, maybe we can do is because like Roger said, it doesn't have to be one or two. If we have a components who, a team who really want to experiment on service mesh, we'll be happy to support. We will be doing that anyway. So very much willing to support for it. If a project team thinks that the CD is where to spend our time right now, and that's great. So these two are not fully tied. What I was saying earlier is that if you do take both, then there are a lot more information available, so you can do very fine-grained things. But that may not be, suitable for everyone. So if we do two separate tracks on that, that's perfectly fine. We'll still be using the same test beds and shared resources, so it shouldn't be a problem at all.
Okay. So when think this is Srini here, I mean, maybe I didn't understand everything properly, but my understanding is that, what Clover team is doing is that creating set of tools to ensure that, some of these microservice technologies are deployed well and tested, deployed well, and then they're configured well. And then those tools are basically kept in your CI/CD pipeline, right? So based on whatever I looked at Clover's GitHub repository, my understanding is that you have validation of FluentD configuration, service mesh Istio configuration, Istio ingress rules, you know. So the assumption I thought you are making in the Clover project is that, you know, the target projects like ONAP are using these underneath the technologies like service mesh, Istio, Fluentd, Prometheus, and, you know, things like that. And then your tools are actually helping to validate whether those technologies are well installed and configured well. So I thought that Clover project would be helpful only when we use these technologies in the target project. Is it not?
Yeah. So the way I put it is that you have two big categories. One is the service mesh and the tools related to that. And the other one is the Spinnaker for a pipeline definition of a continuous deployment. The two, when they work together, they are the best. But if you can adopt only part of it without the service mesh. So there's nothing wrong with starting a single microservice, for example, and use the CI/CD to allow you to do dynamic deployment. And that works too. And because we're taking, you know, gradual approach, if some project want to do that first, I think that's the perfectly legit way of doing it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that part I understood. But assuming that, you know, you currently you have validations for Fluentd, Prometheus, and Istio, and many more. But assuming that target project mm-hmm. is not using any one of them, then Clover's tools are not that useful, right? I mean, you are assuming that one of those underlying packages are used, like Istio or something, at least a subset of them. That's where I'm just trying to understand.
Right. In that case, you can still.
Yeah.
Oh, well, in that, what Clover project scope is one question. And I think we're talking about what a ONAP project may take advantage of it. And you don't have to use all of those. That's
true.
I don't
know
whether that's
more. But you have to use some of those, at least. Then Clover project would help in validating those.
Yeah.
Okay. Got it.
Yeah,
okay.
Of course. Yeah, otherwise, you know, you can do it on your own. There's no additional value for it.
Exactly. So that's
but a common value is for continuous deployment. That's the sort of like the minimum. You don't even necessarily need to be a container. You can be a virtual machine and we'll still be able to use that. So that's a sort of a low hanging fruit, I guess.
Okay, so got it. Okay. So, I mean, I just want, in that case, everybody to understand that, you know, the purpose is to make these, some of these cloud native open source projects. And if you're adopting them, then Clover would help in ensuring that those tools are basically properly configured and deployed. And that validation tools can be put into existing CI/CD pipeline.
Okay, so just to kind of get my understanding right, Srini, this is Munish. So in case, you know, these technologies like service mesh, etc. are not used, is Clover not adding significant value on top? Is that what you're saying?
Yes. Because the purpose is that, one of these technologies are used, or subset of these technologies, or all of the technologies are used. Right? That's where the real value of Clover.
Okay. I think then Parvez was right.
Well,
if we adopt service mesh, then only Clover is useful for ONAP.
So it doesn't need to be service mesh, but Prometheus or, Fluentd, anything.
Those tools are not necessary. Service mesh and CD or Spinnaker is definitely not necessary service mesh. So you can, we were talking about the first use case would be a continuous deployment pipeline. And so that you don't necessarily need service mesh.
But you also, need to make that also need to be working and workable for Well, not just containers, but as you just said that, you know, continuous delivery, continuous integration is not a cloud native specific technology, right? It's something that you can use against VMs or physical machine equipment, or it's just it's a software development practice. And so we kind of need to tease that apart from, we do need it in ONAP, but you know, we need to implement it in such a way that that sort of makes it work across a variety of deployment scenarios, right? Whether it's container driven or VM or whatnot. Using a service mesh has its applications as well, but even if you talk to the people who brought you the service mesh, they'll say that it's usable in very specific cases and may actually have adverse impact on larger systems if it's not used correctly. So again, you know, we need to be careful in creating the right set of boundaries for how we use service mesh and what we do with it inside ONAP. Or we may potentially end up in a bit of a pickle when it comes to performance and so on.
So what I'm hearing for the next step is to have Wenjing and Roger go off and talk between the two projects, and then you know, come back with a proposal once they've been able to sort this out.
Yes. So we're here to support you, and I think those are very good the next steps.
Great.
Hold on, Chris, can you hear me?
Yes, Parviz.
Yeah, I'm hearing a lot of echo here. So you bring this Clover project into ONA, or that's a stay in OPNFE?
That's what we're talking about. What's the best way to support ONAP with the project? Do we do it cross-project, or do we need to do something else? So I'd recommend that we let the teams talk and figure out the best way to work together, and then come back with a proposal.
I see.
That sounds good to me.
Great, thank you.
All right, thank you very much. Thanks for the time.
Thank you.
Thanks. So let's move on to the next topic. Sumitra with OSAM.
Yes, hi Chris.
Hi.
Can you hear me?
Okay. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Okay, thanks. Yeah, we can do the awesome today. Hello everyone, my name is Sumitra Bojan with AT&T. You know, Chris, can you give presenting rights to Bora? Bora, are you on?
Yeah, everybody should have it. Just click the share screen button in the middle of your screen.
Okay, great. Thank you. Yep, I can see it. So I'm going to present jointly with Bora from NetSeal. And so this is the open source access manager pronounced as awesome. And we're proposing this as a use case for the Casablanca. If you move to the next slide, okay. So this is an effort to basically be able to support or integrate one of the ONF project, which is called Volta, with ONAP. So let me kind of give a very high level on, you know, what the Volta project is. It's a key project under the ONF community umbrella that introduces the next generation broadband access architecture. It's all based on SDN NFV technology. And you know, it's sort of a mediation layer that provides a uniform way to access the underlying access devices. So like I said, it's unified management and control of all of these devices, such as OLTs, you know, which we use for the PON technology, XGS or GPON, and GFast, which is, you know, on the it's the copper side of the, you know, for the network. And meaning this project, you know, we use a lot of the open white box solution from OCP. And if you look at this community, it's pretty broad. There are several service providers who are actively involved in this project, and as well as vendor community as well. And we've done several POCs, AT&T, we've been doing POCs, and we also did a field trial late last year it was very successful, and I may be leaving some names, but I know several providers, service providers are also doing or in the process of doing some POCs or field trials. I know Dutch Telecom, Liscom, NTT, and several others are very actively engaged in this project. And one of the keys, you know, to be able to integrate with ONAP. I think that that's our goal for this year. This slide shows the pod itself, what we call the Access Network Peripheral Pod. It's one of the reference design. There may be, you know, different variations of a reference design. This is kind of, you know, I would say it's one of them. So if you look at that pod in the blob box, Access Peripheral Pod, this is what we envision to go into like central office type of environment. So we would have like tens of thousands of central offices. Meaning it's very similar to what we also, there's another project I know, several parallel streams called Edge Cloud, Aquino. We're working with those teams as well and collaborating to see, you know, if there are any overlaps or, you know, because we don't want to do that, right? But I think this is a little bit unique in that sense, because it's not, I wouldn't call it as a general cloud-like. This is even more like small footprint. You can look at it as like maybe just one, you know, one rack or even half a rack, very small footprint. It's kind of a self-contained pod with PNFs and VNFs that does, you know, the broadband access. It's mostly out of the ONF community shop. So it's more of a kind of a packaged pod itself. It can be extended to outside plant because some of the GFast DPUs, you know, they're installed in an apartment building or outside plant. And we also have the ONT. So the pod in general would also be responsible for managing some of those components. So together, they all, you know, we call all of these as the peripheral. Okay, then move to the next slide. So again, the goal of the AWSM is to kind of bring this Volta or, you know, several projects that under ONF into ONAP, be able to activate these pods in several, like, you know, like I said, tens of thousands of locations and be able to manage them as well.
Sumitra, one question. Sure. In the previous picture, the slide number three, I guess, you have this VONO sphere. So in the VOSAM project, is the intention is to connect VONAP to VOLTA directly or go via this VONOS?
Well, at this point, we are looking at, you know, doing it via the ONOS because there are several, meaning all of the access applications are all based on ONOS. So that's why I kind of call it as a pod by itself because it does have dependency on several VNFs. In the future, I'm not, you know, meaning we could expand it to something like, you know, Volta being independent of that, you know, so I'm not going to, you know, limit it only to this use case. I think in the future, that's definitely something that we can, you know, discuss and do it in our app.
Okay. And second question is this Volta, I mean, in the previous slide, I thought I got an impression that the Volta can not only talk to OLT, but also ONT and GFast. But yes. In this picture, they're showing only OLT. So I'm just wondering.
Oh, well, in general, the GFast DPU is kind of via a PON network, right? It will go through an OLT. You're right, meaning it can also, I mean, it could be direct as well. You know, if you just use like, you know, some other way of backhaul, like Ethernet, point-to-point Ethernet is also another option. But typically we do use the PON technology, you know, so the fiber out of the central office is typically via the OLT. And GFast DPUs will be, you know, closer to the customer location, right?
No, my question is that the Volta controller, does it configure ONT also in addition to OLT or only
yes.
OLT?
Yes, it does, and as well as the GFast DPU. And that's okay. Actually, I mean, I'll have to look at the roadmap. I think it's being planned for maybe Volta 2.0. Bora, correct me if I'm wrong. That's work in progress, yes.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, you're welcome. So I think we can move to the next one, Laura, slide 5. Okay, so this is this kind of gives an overall, you know, like an end-to-end architecture picture, very high level. And you will see, you know, the arrow on the left, and it kind of shows the different communities and the collaboration between the different communities. On the right, going bottom up, that's the white box OCP hardware. We have several specs in the OCP community for OLTs as well as GFAS DPOs, and planning to do more OLTs as well. And then the right above that in the green box is all of the ONF components. I'm just kind of going to call it like cord-like, but it could be different. Like I said, you know, based on the reference architecture, you can have different components of the cord in your architecture. So here I'm kind of showing the hardware abstraction, which is the Volta piece, as well as the V-axis applications that we use along with ONOS controller. Now we want to kind of move up, right, to the blue box. That's where, you know, our focus is for this project, to be able to integrate this with ONAP, and that's the awesome project. So the goal is to, in general, you know, bridge the two, you know, the ONF and the ONAP.
So, Mitra, sorry, one question on previous slide.
Sure.
I mean, I'm just trying to map, you know, picture on slide number three to slide number six.
Uh-huh.
So whatever you mentioned here, generally edge, is that what you meant local controller there, or a pod controller there?
Yes, generally edge is what I would call it as a pod, right?
Okay. So that, and what, have, is V-axis? What is V-axis?
Virtual access. It's basically the broadband access. It's nothing to do with security or anything, so it's I can kind of clarify the name. It's broadband access network, or the technologies.
Okay. So in this green box, it basically has ONOS and the Volta and all that component.
Right.
That you showed.
ONOS, Volta, yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, so this kind of, you know, and I think I've already probably covered some of this, you know, in the as a talking point in the previous slide. So like I said, it's very light, light and right deployable units, a very small footprint that will be in like central office. And it's a good use case for the edge cloud Ukraine project as well. And the way we look at it for the integration with ONAP is this pod as a plug and play, you know, black box. So I'm going to hand over to Bora, who will cover the remaining slides.
So Mitra, I just one question on the previous slide. Can you just little bit describe how it is related to Equino project edge cloud use case?
Oh, well, meaning I know Edge Cloud, the Equino project is kind of still, I mean, it's been kicked off and there, you know, a lot of work is being planned. At this point, you know, meaning I know Equino is targeting support for containers, right? I think that's kind of one of the use cases there. And as part of, meaning at this point, you know, we're trying to integrate with the two, but then, you know, Equino is not going to be released probably, I would think, you know, at least end of the year or could be next year, right? So we're trying to coordinate as much as we can and be able to use most of the stack that they plan to use. It's more of the lightweight stack that they're planning to.
No, but Sumitra, I think the question is very simple. Are we for Casablanca, are we going to use Equino or not use Equino? If I'm not going to use Equino, why say that Equino? That's there's no dependency. I'm not getting an answer here. So whether are we using Equino or a Casablanca or not using Equino?
Well, meaning, if that's the question, I don't think Equino will be in time for Casablanca.
But
the goal is to align, you know, as much as we can to the Equino stack.
That's very no answer, because align as much as we can doesn't mean are we going to is the cloud or not a cloud.
Actually, let me clarify. So right up till this point, Sumitra was trying to give us the overall perspective of the Volta and the OSAM project and the value that it will add to the ONAP platform. we still actually did not talk about the actual proposal, the integration proposals. These are the, you know, like the possibilities and potentials or future plans. So, Acreno is part of the future plan, but it is not part of the Casablanca proposal.
So one question on, I mean, what Sumitra mentioned, and is it right to assume that whatever the components which you showed in the green box in the earlier slide, are they all containers or are they VMs? In the slide number six.
Meaning I know Volta is a container. Do we have a mix of VMs and containers, Bora?
Yeah, there is a mix of VMs and containers. The Volta 2.0 actually architecture decision is made to make it container based, but there are still some other component that comes from the core platform that are not container based. Some are not. Some are like in the form of SDN applications. The beauty of this actually architecture will be when ONAP with Acreno or with other means have container-based deployment of the VNFs, then the integration will be seamless.
Okay. So if some are containers or some are virtual machines, what VM are you using there? Are you using both OpenStack and Kubernetes? Or are you just, if it's a mix, I guess you're using mix of those two VMs, or are you using only one VM?
It's a mix.
Mix, okay. So you're using both OpenStack and Kubernetes in that part, in that access peripheral part.
Yeah.
Okay.
This is Shaka. I have a question. So on this picture, so what does the two-way arrow between ONAP and the access peripheral pod mean?
I think that's what we will get into the details when Bora covers. What is it that you're proposing?
Yeah, if you like.
Is that okay? Let's go into that.
No, I understand, but sorry, I'm trying to understand at high level. If you could go back, if you don't mind, and go back to that picture, yes, to that diagram. So does that mean this project is going to provide all the components that are bounded by that box, the access peripheral pod? I'm trying to understand the scope of this project.
Correct, yeah. It will deliver them, but all of these actually will be delivered in a gray box fashion.
So back to the question that Vimal just asked, would that box, with all the components that are contained within that box, be deployed on an edge cloud or on a data center cloud?
On edge cloud.
Okay, therefore Acreno is going to be assumed that it is the edge cloud, and therefore it would have to be there. It would have to be a prerequisite, right?
Right. Well, with the timing of the Acreno, right? So that's why I think Vimal was trying to clarify. Trying to do this, kind of ahead of Acreno, if you will. So that's why the proposal of, meaning the awesome project, to kind of treat this as a PNF by itself, or the pod. Bora will cover in the later.
I'm sorry to say this, but how can you treat this whole edge location with the compute and the local aggregation switch and the storage and all the element deployed there as one PNF? It's not one PNF. You can't treat it as like a PNF. I don't know what
that's
you
right.
mean.
Yeah, that's right. It seems.
It's really, I'm baffled, and Shaka, I'm glad you asked this question. I don't even know what the double arrow means.
Exactly.
I agree, from Amdocs, this is Arash Ekmat. This would be a deployment nightmare for a service provider.
Exactly. I have no idea what it means.
But I want to give the people, the presenters, the benefit of the doubt, and that's why I'm probing, right?
Yeah.
Right. But we're also, you know, the same thing. You know, we want to understand the community as well. So maybe if we go through the slides and then some of that may answer the question.
No, I understand that.
Go back and clarify any remaining questions, if that's okay.
No, I understand. Fully understand. Right. So, but this is, at least from my perspective, right, at least it'll help me ask the right questions. What I'm trying to understand is, what are the prerequisites that would need to be supported by ONAP in order for the ONAP platform to be able to support what you're proposing? That's the key.
I don't know if there's a kind of prereq. I mean, I know if you're trying to, you know, relate to a crane now, like I said, you know, with the timeline, our goal at this point is to treat this like a pod itself. So, though I did mention as an edge cloud, you can consider this as sort of an edge cloud that has its own compute resource, right? So that's the idea at this point, to keep it more independent, you know, and not affect the timeline. And in the future, you know, this could merge as like I said, as a use case for Acrano when that becomes available. Let's go with slides and then, you know.
Okay, that's fine. Can I make one last comment? This is where I'm having a hard time understanding. If it is an edge cloud, then the edge cloud would have to be a powerful enough, if you will, to support all these components that are included in that box, including ONAP. That's where I'm getting a little bit confused, but perhaps because I don't fully understand it, but I'm just trying to explain to you why I'm asking these questions. That's all.
Yeah.
Please go ahead. Thank you.
I understand. I mean, all the, you know, curiosity and the objections to the PNF approach, actually that's so normal. This is just what I actually get from pretty much everyone. But the idea behind this, it's not like, you know, we just came up with only this idea and, you know, like we are being obsessive about it. It's like we now are trying to integrate into two very different worlds, and we need to actually move forward in a phased approach. Otherwise, it will take years to have ONAP benefit from this Volta value that is being created. So, what we are looking into is to a method that will actually help us achieve our goals actually in a short period of time, and you know, have ONAP benefit from the Volta use case, and does not have any architectural impact on the existing ONAP, so that we're not going to unnecessarily use ONAP resources, development resources, and the like. And we should be able to actually keep the development we are doing moving forward. So we shouldn't throw away the code we are writing right now, actually the extensions, the add-ons, the hooks to the ONAP platform. We should be able to keep them as is moving forward.
So let's hear the rest of the proposal, because I can see a couple of different ways that this might attach, and I'd like to see what the team came up with first. And then we can talk through whether that's the right approach or whether we should consider something else. Okay. So let me hand this back to Bora.
All right. So the overall architecture is this. So we're going to onboard a PNF that will describe a whole access peripheral edge, and it will be controlled from an ONAP UI component that we will add to ONAP. And this PNF will actually have three main functionality inside of it: the OSAM control, the OSAM HA, the hardware abstraction, the Volta component, the actual Volta component, and the OSAM collector in order to collect telemetry data and feed the DCAE. So this is the overall approach.
So are you gonna speak any about why we modeled the entire pod as a PNF instead of modeling an ONAP each of the individual components as PNFs or VNFs or whatever?
Sure. There is several reasons about that. The VNFs within the Volta and Core actually platform that we are trying to integrate are written in a non Vim or ETSI compliant way. So first of all, we should actually start rewriting them, each and every VNF, according to the VNF guidelines. And there is also some of the VNFs are not implemented in virtual machines. These VNFs are implemented as SDN applications. And these SDN applications are realized through OpenFlow or P4 at the fabric layer level context. And these need to be written from scratch for ONAP as a Vim. I mean, Vim compliant, OpenStack compliant VNF. And then we will need to actually design the service through the service design, or just, you know, we can also pre-design that, but onboard that and have it deployed to a generic Vim environment. And this will require us to go through all the tests and integration tests and everything. That will take a lot of efforts and a lot of time to reach a working platform.
And so what component, shown in this green box at the bottom, are deployed by ONAP, orchestrated and deployed by ONAP?
I'm sorry, I couldn't follow.
What component? You have three, the PNF has three, OSAM controller, OSAM HA, OSAM collector. Mm-hmm. Which of those are deployed by ONAP here? Or
None of them.
I mean, none of them. So yeah. What is ONAP doing here then? ONAP is just saying that there is a PNF.
Yeah. So it's attaching to SDNC, is that right? That it looks just like an external SDN controller?
No, it's not.
Did I misread that?
No,
it's not. So let's say I deploy this pod, which has the compute, storage, switch fabric, and few other things as one black box. What does that mean? How do I deploy that?
So the deployment is just out of scope. I mean, it's just needs okay. to treat it as a PNF, really. I mean.
What does ONAP do when we say we have a PNF descriptor that I deploy anything, or does it discover something, or what does it do?
Yeah, what ONAP actually is doing through the ONAP UI, it manages provision subscribers to the services that is provided by the access peripheral edge. And monitors the events and creates closed control loops.
What are we closing? Because I don't even know any element. You said I don't deploy any element here. Yeah,
maybe I just
maybe you continue maybe
further. Yeah, I mean, so this actually is. You know, the typical PNF handling that is being done by ONAP. And as business as usual, we will be onboarding this PNF just like right in here in a R2 use case, the Volti project did. The exact same similar approach we are following. So we make sure that there won't be any additional requirements implementation required by ONAP team. So we're basing our approach to this, and just like any other PNF, ONAP will be onboarding it, and we will be able to create services, and we will be able to create products and product offers around this service. So this is where ONAP comes into the picture.
But so the PNF, you saw the example from 5G, is a one box that needs, so it emit one event to say I'm here, here's manufacturer ID, here's the box ID, and give me an ONM IP address. Show me how a pod is, it's not one box, it has multiple boxes, should be treated as a PNF.
Yeah. So let's consider this scenario. So we are treating each central office, each edge cloud, I mean each access peripheral pod as a PNF instance, where we will have tens of thousands of these access peripheral blocks deployed out. Each of them actually will contain a number of OLT devices. And each OLT will have a number of ports, and each port will serve a number of households. I mean, let's consider the residential broadband connectivity. So that means our PNF will register the following data: its location, IP address, and the households it is serving to, along with the connection details, I mean access device details, so that we can centrally monitor what's going on, collect data through DCAE, and trigger charging and everything.
So, let me ask, make sure I'm following. So, is there any aggregate? Are each of those pods or the green boxes? Mm-hmm. Are they partitioned, or are they discrete from each other, separate from each other, or is there aggregation going on? Is everything in the green box dedicated to one house?
Well, each green box, meaning it's in the central office, right? So they are independent.
Yeah.
So what is the PNF registered data? This isn't per, there's a whole table of this per pod, right? ONAP would need to discover.
Yeah, correct.
So ONAP is going to think of this thing as a PNF, mm-hmm. but it's going to monitor house. It's going to be a PNF with hundreds of IP addresses, a variable number of IP addresses.
Typically it may go up to 20,000 of households.
ONAP is aware of this. ONAP thinks it's managing a PNF with a variable number of IP addresses between 1 and 20,000.
Not IP addresses, because the IP address is to identify the core pod itself.
I see.
Not the households.
So is there one IP address for the whole pod?
Yeah.
Can you go back to slide 16? That's the one that confused me, I guess.
The 16? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's the IP for the...
for the pod.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, so it's this is an IP... This is... So what does ONAP do with this household level data?
Okay. So here it is. I mean, I don't know if you can just follow these details. Let me try to... zoom a little bit. Sorry for the slow operation. So this actually is where things are starting. The access peripheral pod goes to PNF handler and registers itself with the central office ID, the correlation ID, the central office IP, and the list of hosted households.
Well, that list would be empty, right?
Yeah, that list could be pretty large.
Well, it would be empty. Yeah, I guess for a new pod, it would be when ONAP discovers the PNF, it would be empty, right?
That's right.
Presumably. You.
Well, it won't be empty because, as a matter of fact, there is a, you know, physical dependency. So we need to know at each central office, the access peripheral pod, which households we are connected to.
No, I'm trying to follow this. So is this slide representing ONAP discovering a new pod? Or is this a migration scenario whereby we've got pods out there existing and now we're trying to get ONAP caught up?
This is the PNF registration step. I mean, this actually maps to this flow here.
So for a PNF registration, the way it works is you plug in the PNF, it becomes alive, it goes and gets us it goes and gets an IP address, and it generates an event that says, I'm here, I'm alive, I'm empty, fill me up now, configure me. I'm trying to figure out, is that what this is?
This is that one, yes.
So then it wouldn't have a list of hosted households, right?
The list of all the residents it's able to reach. So maybe it's a house number 1, 2, 3, 4, and house the apartment number 3, 4, 6, 7, 8. It will have a list of all the apartments that are reachable.
I see.
The entities are reachable. And that list is, that's not what we had registration event. If you have 20,000 addresses in that event, that's not an event. That's a bulk data load.
I mean, we can just go for some alternative implementation for that. I mean,
I think that there was a question which somebody asked earlier. What would ONAP do with this list of household data? That's critical because is ONAP going to the space of subscriber management now?
No, and that's not what we do.
So this goes to, you know, to ANAI. So we have now in ANAI. Sorry, this is so slow. Maybe I can use. Yeah. Okay, this is way faster. So this goes to ANAI, and ANAI will have all the the households that are registered to that central office access peripheral.
I'm really sorry to tell you, but yeah. ANAI was never designed to.
Yeah, that's right. This is where.
This is application level data. Yeah, we don't store application level data.
Right, guys, can we back up for a second? Let me make two comments. One, I think Bora, you mentioned earlier that the configuration of the household is done through a GUI of some type. That sounds like what folks are saying here. The configuration of subscribers is typically out of scope of ONAP, and if it's done through a GUI, I mean, ONAP does automated orchestration of deployment of VNFs, instantiation, and configuration of service. So maybe what's needed here, I think we need to all back up and start from the point of view that says we know how ONAP spins up, deploys, configures, and then monitors a VNF. I think we need to come all the way back and say, what is known about ONAP as I start to deploy this pod? Did I do a service definition in SDC that describes what this box does, how it's configured, how it's to be managed? Do I use SO, service orchestration, to orchestrate any aspects of that box? I think you got to go back up to the top and say, here's how ONAP deploys, instantiates, configures, and manages a VNF. Here's how it would do a similar thing for this pod. Because I think the notion of subscriber, individual subscriber configuration is out of scope in the same way that if we configured a 5G infrastructure with ONAP, we wouldn't provision the individual UEs. ONAP wouldn't do that. That's at the service level done via service control applications. So I think we need to back everybody up to the point where we know how ONAP does this in the world of VNFs. How would it do the same set of functions for the pod that you're talking about?
Okay, so what I hear is that instead of having all the households actually registered to the NAI, it will be sufficient to only register the central office, the pod.
Well, what I'm saying is, let's back up. I think we're mired in too much detail at the moment. Let's back up and say, you know, in the world of services today, we have service definitions that are defined in STC. That creates service descriptions. Those descriptions are used by service orchestration to understand what resources need to be marshaled and deployed where. Once those resources are marshaled, there's a orchestration process that configures that for the service requested, and then there is the interaction with DCAE to give DCAE what it needs to do the monitoring and management of that service. What is the equivalent process that you're thinking of for this pod? So if you contrast each of the phases we know about in ONAP, service definition, then I get a request for service. I then do the deciding what resources need to be marshaled and instantiated. I deploy them, I configure them, I manage them. What is the equivalent that you have in mind for this pod for each of those processes?
Yeah, here is the equivalent actually. So the OSAM PNFD, the peripheral, the PNFD that describes the access peripheral is onboarded to ONAP and all the artifact distributions takes place. And the next
when we say all the artifact, what artifact do we have here? Can you give me an example?
In other words, at this point, when you say it's onboarded, does that mean within SDC, I have a metadata description of what's inside your pod, those various components within the pod?
Correct.
Well, so no, apparently, yes. As a black box, right? I mean,
but if it's a black box, why do
if it's a black box, I can't have that, right?
Right. You have to ask for clarification. Yeah, well, does ONAP know what's inside a pod, or does ONAP see it as just one PNF?
It is just one PNF. And, I mean, to my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, PNF is identified, you know, with some endpoints, connectivity, its connectivity to the network, and its configuration. So this PNFD will actually have the connectivity info, as it's, just one single and simple example of the configuration would be then the endpoint, the IP address, to communicate with this PNF. And once I do have that PNF definition in my system, then I can create a service around it. So let's say I'm creating a virtual broadband service for the end users and subscribers. But for the end users and subscribers to subscribe that service, I need to create a product and a set of offers. And so this is just done at this stage as business as usual, as it is done for any VNF or as it is done for any PNF. So,
I'm so sorry, but how do you say I have a central office and I connect to central office to create a service? Makes no sense. How do I connect two central offices to create a service?
Well, wait, I was thinking more about this subscriber. So you're saying when a household orders both, you know, the underlying networking service, someone at runtime would go into ONAP and say, add this household up. Is that right? Or is that outside? What is the whole household in VSG? Is that a per customer service? Is an instance of that virtual broadband service? It's an instance of that per household, or is an instance of that per pod?
But so this is Shaka. Yeah, so can I interject for a second?
This is just a note to help me during the. This is not part of the service creation. But yeah.
So this is Shaka. I want to go back to the point or points that Paul made earlier, right? I think there is a little bit of confusion in terms of how do we create, how do we orchestrate a service via ONAP and how customers are provisioned on that service. It seems to me that this is mixing the two together, and I think we need to, actually, we can't leave a gray area. We need to make sure that there is a clear separation between the orchestration of a service, whether that service is a PNF-based or VNF-based, and the provisioning of the service, which is the responsibility of the OSS.
Well, I mean, so if they're, I'm trying to understand the proposal here. So if what they're saying here is that the PNF is multi-tenant, this pod is a multi-tenant thing, which we would model as an allotted resource in ONAP, and each instance of allotted resource is a household. Is that what we're saying? That each time a household signs up for something, we would ONAP would receive a service instantiation request for a virtual broadband service instance. ONAP would orchestrate it and then create an allotted resource.
Yeah, each time I add each time I add a new subscriber, activate a new service, that is what will happen. But not at each time that that household uses the service. It's just at subscription time.
Yeah, right. So when the household signs up and when they terminate their contract, we would delete the allotted resource, whatever the configuration. So so what you're saying is that when a virtual broadband service instantiation request comes in, ONAP would see itself as sending, as configuring a PNF for that household. I guess you're right. Is that what?
I mean, yeah.
But get what you just said.
ONAP sees itself instantiating a service, just like any other service. And in here, creating a virtual broadband service will just contain one single PNF definition, and that's it. It's gonna wrap that PNF. It's not going to chain it to with any other. Although we can.
Well, this is one to many, right? So for each pod, I can have many virtual broadband service instances. I'm assuming it's 20,000, right?
Yeah.
Is that true?
But though, Gil, so from an ONAP perspective, right, ONAP doesn't do anything that is not specified in the recipe that comes from the OSS, right?
That was earlier point.
Yeah, so we're mixing the two together. We're mixing the orchestration of the service instances with the provisioning of customers on that service. To me, this proposal is actually a use case for ONAP. Because the same claims that we're making over here would apply to the 5G provisioning as well, customer provisioning, right?
And we don't do 5G customer provisioning.
Exactly, exactly.
Only right. Deploy 5G network element, and absolutely. If somebody has put in the, what they put in PCRF and what they put in HSS is it's outside ONAP scope.
Absolutely, and the PCRF and the HSS and all these components, right, are provisioned by the service. They're outside their own app scope.
I agree, but it's starting to look more like a VCPE use case to me.
No, it's not even that. I'll just say one more time. To say a central office is one black box and you provision a subscriber, let's say we can even do it. I don't think we can do it, but let's say we do it. It means, how do I say the customer is not getting the performance because the central office is out? Or only thing I know is central office is working or not working. That doesn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah, maybe actually I go through this flows, finish them, because some of these questions are answered. So the access peripheral registers itself, as I said, says I'm here and it gets its configuration. from the OSM UI, we may remove the household list from this event and make it part of this configuration step. That's possible. I take as a comment. And this configuration goes through the SO and the APC, just like any other configuration goes. And in, it reaches the access peripheral and it is implemented there. And from this time on, the access peripheral as being activated starts sending central office-wide telemetry data to DCAD. That means it will tell about its status, whatever information we will need to see from ONAP perspective in terms of monitoring or in terms of creating closed loops will be then available to DCAE. So DCAE and ONAP will know what is going on at the access peripheral pod and status and any other information.
But don't you want to make sure that you have full operational control over the central office independent of what goes on inside the ONAP instance? It seems like we're building this one big giant bottleneck and one big giant single point of failure called ONAP. And it seems like you probably want to create more of a distributed peer-to-peer environment. Certainly would be more like building a cloud than not if we did that. Where some of the functionality is retained inside the central office and we call on it through a capability catalog or something along those lines. And data is exchanged, but it's not gonna stop exchanging, or you're not gonna stop doing analytics if ONAP is down.
Yeah, if you're collecting the data through DCAE from the various households, ONAP isn't going to really do anything with that. What I see from this presentation is more that ONAP is controlling the connectivity services for this pod at the edge for the central office. If you want to connect through different paths through your aggregation network, but not so much going down into the household. That's the part I'm struggling with.
I would agree, Chris. But I think it's, sorry, just to finish my point,
it seems like you also have a one-to-many relationship between the central offices and that version, single version of ONAP. That's never going to scale.
So this is Shaka, but, you know, I think we all, they heard the comments from us, but having said that, I think this is a really good use case for us to entertain as a team, right?
It's a good use case as long as we play the right role within that use case and don't create a mess where we're impeding it as opposed to enabling it. That's the problem, right?
Shaka, if you said that pod we deploy in the central office is a kernel instance, I will have no problem. We know that all the resources available. Now you say, go and deploy a VNF called Volta. I'll be more than happy to do that using ONAP. And say, go and deploy some OLT VNF. More than happy to do that. Say, configure a pawn PNF. I can do that. So if you expose those elements to ONAP and manage them, you will have no problem. But to treat it as a black box, the whole central office.
Yeah, I agree.
I would go a step further and say that I would be more than happy to deploy those with an instance of ONAP running in the central office. It might be slim, might be trimmed down, but it's not going to be the same instance that's going to have to be deploying simultaneously to 20, 30, 100, 1500 central offices.
Yes, I agree with all the comments. I think these are good comments that we need to give to the presenters, right?
Yeah. Let me actually give my perspective on that. I do agree. Sure. I do agree that it could be done like that. It's a proper architecture, and I do really agree with that. But the timing is also critical. And
So what are the gaps? So this looks like an alternative architecture, right? What are the gaps that led you to an alternative architecture? If we could understand that, then maybe we can work through, you know, how to support it in the near term.
Yeah, this is an interim step towards Akraino. So we all need to, understand that.
And, well, even if it wasn't Akraino, I mean, if you modeled, even this is just as flat PNFs, right? So, I mean, if there's a device on the side of the house that's modeled as a PNF, you know, sort of like a VCPE that stays outside instead of comes inside, you model the other things as devices that ONAP is aware of. And then when a residential customer orders an instance of this service, then ONAP knows how to touch the different real PNFs and the different VNFs and actually configure them. That would make sense. It would seem like a variation on the residential VCPE use case. But here you're taking an entire network and a bunch of network functions and modeling them as a pod, telling ONAP this is just one big PNF, and saying, don't really manage this thing. So what is it that led you to that architecture as opposed to trying to get ONAP to really manage this network? What are the gaps?
The existing implementation that we have in place did not take a straightforward approach, a straightforward open stack kind of deployment. So the VNFs, as it is right now, are not packaged as ETSI compliant or OpenStack compliant VNFs. So we need to repackage them.
I can give you another alternative.
Let me ask a companion question. Sure. Under your approach, what entity knows about and manages the VNFs in the pod, and how does what goes on in the pod get conveyed outside the pod to other entities that need to know what's going on?
Okay. So the only thing we are shortcutting here is that the VNF lifecycle management is done by the core platform. The core platform that comes from ONF.
So I, as an operator, not only has to know how to operate all the element that ONAP does, the closed loop and the DCA and the policy and the orchestration controller. Mm-hmm. Now I have a separate set of tools called code platform that mm-hmm. to manage each individual office. And a simple question is, what value did ONAP add here? It's a very simple question. Not that what value, what problem, what value are we adding by using ONAP here? I don't see any value being added here.
The value added here is both ways, though. I mean, ONAP adds Volta, the integration to OSS and BSS,
there are a bunch of words that don't mean much. What value did I add here? I'm not adding any value here.
You would never order these services through ONAP, right? You would go through a different path. So what's the two-way integration about?
Well, is that true, Alex? I mean, this to me, this looks like a connectivity service. The customer is acting to be connected to something, right?
But they're also two distinctive administrative.
But it sounds like they're saying the customer order of the service is accommodated through some type of GUI. I agree with what Alex is saying here. Go ahead, Alex.
No, yeah, my point is that you have two administrative domains to begin with. You have separation of concerns here, where you're going to manage your central office separately from the core instance of ONAP. And that's good, right? Uh-huh. And so maybe that's why you don't want to expose a lot of the details about that central office location to ONAP. But then it becomes a peer-to-peer orchestration kind of problem, right? It's kind of like creating a slice across different opcos, right? It may be connectivity. There may be additional things that ONAP needs to provision and then connect. It could be anything, right? So my point is that maybe it's not about managing even VNFs. Maybe these are two separate separate instances of ONAP or management functionality of some sort that does that. All we're really talking about is how to maybe orchestrate something larger with this.
But sorry, if this is Arash from Amdocs, but if the central ONAP doesn't know what's happening in the central offices, it's really blind. And
how in what way? But what is it managing there?
How would the service provider...
It's not my domain.
According to the way it's been described so far, it seems like this GUI is being used to configure subscribers, but that's not really an ONAP task anyway.
I mean,
I'm at a loss to understand what value ONAP is adding here.
Well, so for any service, I'm saying this, so I agree with Alex, and I also agree with you, Paul, but I don't think you're agreeing with each other. Let me say it so I think I can rationalize it. So for any, I think
we are agreeing with each other, but go ahead, give it a shot.
Okay. Well, there's two levels of service here. Right, there's an infrastructure service, and then there is a service that lays on top of that, which is a classic allotted resources, model. Right, so when ONAP supports allotted resources, you model two services. You model an infrastructure service. You can go to a vid GUI and say, give me another instance of this infrastructure, and then you can go through a separate interaction and say, give me another instance of a allotted resource based service on top of the infrastructure. I think what Alex is saying is that that ONAP perhaps doesn't need to manage the infrastructure service.
Yes.
ONAP could just take the infrastructure services for granted. And so you could come in and just say, I've got an allotted, I've got an infrastructure service which is managed by another provider, another ONAP instance, whatever. And that would be legitimate, right?
Then
you can come on top and say, give me another residential service.
But then we are going to the slippery slope of doing the subscriber management, which we always said is not ONAP job.
Yeah.
Well, no, this isn't.
Right. That's something that I guess, we do have to work on separating.
So if I can interject a comment. So the thing is this, in the VCPE use case, we're doing two things. ONAP delivers value in two ways in the VCP use case. One is there is this box out there at a customer site, and it needs to be configured with some parameters so that the connectivity to the central office is gained. Okay, so this is one place where. Once we create the connectivity, they can talk to each other and they can request all the service that they want. But somebody needs to give some values, to give some parameters to the box and also to the VNFs already instantiated as part of the infrastructure service in order for this to work to create the connectivity. So this is
we did more than that. We updated the BNG. There were a lot of network element that had to be configured for that service to be.
The BNG did not even need to be configured. It was just there. And if it needed to be configured, it was once, but not on a per customer basis. But the point is that this is one value that if you have, something like ONAP, then it happens automatically. You don't have to have people going to the boxes and do configurations. It happens automatically when the service is requested. This is one value. And the other, which probably does not exist here, is that it also required that service request that came from a customer also required to instantiate a VNF called VG in the cloud. And again, of course, ONAP delivers that value. It can instantiate it automatically.
And it also configured an allotted resource on an infrastructure VG MUX.
Right.
Which is
right.
Like the equivalent of the CO here, I think.
But that's actually a good way of looking at things in terms of cloud boundaries. So we have an instance of ONAP managing a cloud. That cloud does not extend into the central offices in any way, right?
Mm-hmm.
So whatever the management environment is or whatever you want to model your central office as, I suggest it could be a cloud, then you end up with a cloud of clouds model, which works really well, and you can do delegation and escalation without having to know the nitty-gritty details about both environments. That's the way clouds are built, right? They're well-defined interfaces.
Yeah, but Alex, you're talking about you know, how to make this scale to the numbers that we're talking here. And I think this is a secondary question to the first question, what value does ONAP bring here?
Exactly. Because
if there is no value, then there is no need to answer the question that you're asking. Okay.
Well, I'm on the follow-up. You're right. Yes.
Yeah. But I want to go back for a second to the question of the value. So
right. that is
what happens in the VCP. Now here, I don't know if there is a need to configure stuff anywhere when a customer when the service is requested by a specific customer. Is there any configuration that is needed? On you know, anywhere, but if there is, then you know, it is something that would be value. And I think there is no you know, VNF that needs to be instantiated for a customer. So if there is an allotted resource which means some configuration on the PNF on this pod, then it could be value. And if there is some configuration that needs to be done at the customer side, if there is some box there or something, then it could be another place to look for value.
Yo, the way I understand is, let's say that you have a central office that can have the connectivity, and you say, I turn on the service called internet services and telephone services and TV services. I say, you, this black box, go and provision your for at this address XYG. If I, that's the only thing, I don't know what that will happen. I don't have any VNF. I don't have anything. I just pass that comment. You don't need ONAP. That can go from OSS to your central office directly. There is no need for ONAP to participate in that transaction.
Well, so I'm not sure. So we do see here on the slide in front of us that APSI is reaching out and touching the pod. Right. So I think, Yoav, you're on the right track with the value question, right? To me, the real issue is, they're coming to us and they're saying, they're coming to ONAP and saying, we want to plug in this box that's called a pod, which isn't really a pod, and we want ONAP to provide just a small amount of value in managing this thing. And I look at this and I say, ONAP could provide a whole lot more value if you were to use the existing ONAP capabilities that I think would allow us to support this thing maybe natively in ONAP. But you're not proposing that, and I'm wondering why. What are the gaps in ONAP?
But Gil, where do you see APSI doing anything here? I don't know where APSI comes in.
The green box at the bottom, the player, the active bomb is the APSI box, and it's provisioning the service to the household, the ONT, via NetComp to the access peripheral pod.
But I don't see the ONT. The peripheral box is not visible to me. I only have the black box of the central office is the only thing I know of. I don't know anything else.
No, down further. So whoever's driving the mouse, go down to the APSI and go up one line to the provision service to household. That's APSI putting on a lot of resource in the pod. Is how I see that.
But why does it need to?
Okay.
But I did not know anything about
it. Also
we're going to have to wrap this up. We're hitting the top of the hour here. I think that you know, the comments from the committee are that you need to go take another look at this. You know, what is it exactly that ONAP provides in terms of value? What are the message flows? And how do you fit in with the existing message flows, and clearly identify what value we're providing, and then I'll be happy to have you come back on a future call once you've had a chance to make some updates.
Okay.
Sure. Thanks, Chris. Yeah, we will do that. I think we need to do some more homework, especially on the subscriber provisioning side, and the rest as well. So I appreciate the feedback here from the team.
Great. Thank you very much. I'll post the recording later today once it finishes its processing. For presenters today, would you please post your slides on the contributions page or drop me an email and I'll post them for you. With that, I'll break for now. we can keep the discussion going through email, and I'll talk to all of you next week. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Chris. Bye-bye. Thanks, everyone. Bye-bye.
Any news on the... Hello, Chris?
Yes.
Any news on the face-to-face meeting on 23rd? Has it been confirmed? Any additional information provided? The last thing I saw on the email list is what that information will be available today or this week.
Yeah, I'm waiting. I don't have the full confirmation. We've got the room assigned. I'm working with them on the registration issues. There's a page up linked under the architecture subcommittee. We covered at the beginning of the meeting that has the logistics and the preliminary agenda for it. So I'll keep that updated and I'll send email. I expect the response back today. I'm sorry I didn't get it before the meeting, but I'll be closing the loop with them and share final details as soon as it comes in.
Where on the wiki page is this?
Let me bring this up again. Sorry. Let's see. I think it's this one. Yeah. So it's called Casablanca Architecture Planning Meeting. It's linked right under the Architecture Subcommittee Meeting. And there's the preliminary agenda posted.
Beautiful. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
No word on the whether there is a charge from the OpenStack.
We're still discussing that. They passed me through three different people now for different aspects of this, and I'm on the third one, and I'll get that closed hopefully today. That's my expectation.
That means they're looking for money.
Okay.
Well, anyways,
all right, thank you.
Yeah. So that's where we go. So I'll post that as soon as I get it. As I said, I'm in email dialogue. I'm expecting that back today.
Okay, great.
Thanks.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.